Reception. Sunritaha. Sweet words. Avagyatam. Thus being neglected. Eva. Like that. Atmanam. Personally. Manyamanaha. Thinking like that. Chukopa. Became angry. Ha. In that way. The king, not received by any formal welcome, by means of being offered a seat, place, water, and sweet addresses, considered himself neglected, and so thinking he became angry. Purport. The law of reception in the codes of the Vedic principles states that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respect. He should not be given a chance to understand that he has come into the house of an enemy. When Lord Krishna, accompanied by Arjuna and Bhima, approached Jarasandha in Magadha, the respectable enemies were given a royal reception by King Jarasandha. The guest enemy, namely Bhima, was to fight with Jarasandha, and yet they were given a grand reception. At night they used to sit down together as friends and guests, and in the day they used to fight, risking life and death. That was the law of reception. The reception law enjoins that a poor man who has nothing to offer his guest should be good enough to offer a straw mat for sitting, a glass of water for drinking, and some sweet words. Therefore, to receive a guest, either friend or foe, there is no expense. It is only a question of good manners. When Maharaj Parikshit entered the door of Samika Rishi, he did not expect a royal reception by the Rishi because he knew that saints and Rishis are not materially rich men. But he never expected that a seat of straw, a glass of water and some sweet words would be denied to him. He was not an ordinary guest, nor was he an enemy of the Rishi. And therefore the cold reception by the Rishi astonished the king greatly. As a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry with the Rishi when he needed a glass of water very badly. To become angry in such a grave situation was not unnatural for the king, but because the king himself was not less than a great saint, his becoming angry and taking action were astonishing. So it must be accepted that it was so ordained by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became ways to the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming a completely surrendered soul under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. The merciful Lord sometimes creates such awkward positions for his pure devotees in order to drag them towards himself from the mire of material existence, Maya spelled M-I-R-E. But outwardly, the situations appear to be frustrating to the devotees. The devotees of the Lord are always under the protection of the Lord, and in any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotees. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustration as blessings from the Lord. Om Ajnati Medandasya Pilanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militantena Tasmae Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadaha Mahiyam Tatati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Gayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. The law of reception. First point, the law of reception. Well, Prabhupada says it isn't very difficult. It need not be expensive. Right, the law of reception. What does he say here? It is only a question of good manners. Good manners. Unfortunately, good manners appear not to be taught everywhere. Right? Or, even if people are aware of what are good manners, they're not able to exercise them. It's a measure of Kali. The influence of Kali, that you know, good manners are a rare commodity. But even in India today, when a guest arrives, then the receiver usually goes out of their way to make a person comfortable. It's just, you know, it's just probably good manners. Especially in Vedic culture, when a saintly person visits, then they attend for the benefit of everybody. And so the host will go out of his way to make a guest comfortable, because, especially with the association of the devotees and advanced saintly persons, their feeling comfortable will then make them relaxed And they'll be inclined then to give good advice or good instructions. You know, that's the etiquette. And it was the duty of the sannyasis and you know, especially the Parivrajikacharyas, those who would travel around. That's the duty of the sannyasis, is to travel. They would travel and enlighten everybody in spiritual knowledge. And so therefore, they're most welcome. Unfortunately, with the degradation of culture and the loss of good manners and the loss of good qualities in persons, you know, now people merely go door to door simply to beg, and not to give good instructions. You know, the sannyasis give in charity knowledge, and would then receive some alms from the hosts. And so therefore, you know, anybody coming to the house would be received very warmly and respectfully, even Prabhupada makes a point, even when it's an enemy, they're an enemy. Make them feel at home. Ordinarily, if your enemy turns up, then one's not inclined to be friendly, right? If an enemy turns up, what do? Close the door. You don't even open the door, right? Just hope that they'll go away. Unwelcome guests. Prabhupada tells us how to deal with unwelcome guests. Don't feed them, right? Then they'll go away. So, but here Prabhupada's saying, you know, the law of reception. This is not just something made up, but rather he mentions it three times, right in the beginning of the purport. The law of reception in the codes of Vedic principles. So one could assume that this is written down somewhere. How to treat a guest, how to look after a guest. Minimum, and it's illustrated here in the purport. Give them a place to sit. The minimum could be a mat of straw. You know, we can assume in the Vedic times, because you know, a mat of straw is not the easiest thing to find in this day and age. It'll be a mat of plastic. But at least, you know, it can be a soft. It'll be soft. You know, most of this carpet is made, or actually this carpet's probably made from wool or a blend of plastic and natural fibres. So, you know, to give somebody a sitting place is not difficult to do, not expensive. And then a drink of water, agya, mentions here. And then sunritaha, sweet words. Huh? Sweet words, pleasant exchanges. This is a proper way of greeting a guest, appropriate way of greeting a guest. Give them a place to sit, offer them a drink of water, inquire as to how they are, look after them, in other words. There was a point in time when Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter, a famous letter, to all of the temple presidents in ISKCON, and he told them that they should have a set up in the kitchen so that if a guest came, there would be a cook ready and available to prepare warm sabjis, rice dal and chapatis, So if anybody came, then they would be received with nice prasadam. Prabhupada wrote this in a letter and sent it to them. This is when the temples were predominantly in Western countries. If you did that in India, then you'd have a big long line of, you'd be cooking all day long. You wouldn't stop cooking. You'd have a huge... But even that's not such a bad thing. You know, Prabhupada says it's the duty of the householders to cook, then to go out into the street and see if there's any hungry people. Anybody hungry, come and take something. You can see that, you know, the culture is very, very different to today. Especially if a saintly person comes, enters the house, then the host will go out of their way to make the person, make the mason prasad and make the guest feel welcome. This is what Prabhupada wanted. You know, this is the laws of reception. Really look after people. And then, of course, if you're looking after people, then they'll reciprocate. They'll share their realizations, their understanding of things. They'll especially look after the saintly persons. Then they'll give transcendental knowledge, which is the greatest of gifts, greatest of possessions, is to have some spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding. Yeah. Even for the enemy, isn't that astounding? Even for your enemy, this is the law of reception. Not followed. I remember once I was going door to door, you know, you get a very different reception. Going door to door selling books. I've told this story before many times. One man opened up the door and he saw me and he just slammed the door. Slammed the door so hard that it bounced back open again. Closed the door. Same day, another man said, "I'm going to go and get my shotgun if you don't get out of here." We went back inside the house and I didn't stick around to find out whether he was in there. So, you know, not obviously aware of the laws of reception and not appreciating or understanding the benefit of receiving a devotee. Receiving a guest, keeping the place clean, well decorated, having a sitting place, you know, and appropriate to one's means. These things should be done according to one's means. There's the example of a number of examples in the Krishna book. The first example that I was looking at this morning is the example of Kubja. Maybe not entirely appropriate, because Kubja was a society girl. You know what that means?
She would please men.
Yeah, basically. That's a good way of putting it. So, you know, she was very enthusiastic to receive Krishna and decorated herself and put on scents and sandalwood pulp and pleasing, attractive ornaments and garments. So, you know, presenting oneself properly is important. And then offering a chair, soft chair, soft seating, especially in that. Actually, it's funny, Prabhupada mentions there's an interesting quotation that I thought was humorous. I wonder if I can find it. No, I probably won't. I'll come back to that. But there's another couple of examples. that are probably more appropriate. There's the reception that Krishna received from Bahulashva and Shrutadev when he went to the kingdom of Mithila to visit his devotees. Actually, it's quite amazing when you think about this situation. Lord Krishna decided to go and visit his devotees, these two devotees. Maharaj Bahulashva was the king, and so he was wealthy, right? Well situated, well appointed. And Shrutadeva was a brahmana and also well situated, both pure devotees, but poor, not wealthy. And but it's amazing, Krishna, listen to the list of people that Krishna went visiting with. He went with Narada Muni, Vamadev, Atri, Vyasadev, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, the compiler of the Vedas, Parashuram, Asita, Aruni, Sukadev, so Sukadev Goswami was with him as well, Brihaspati, was it Brihaspati the spiritual master of the demigods? Imagine the company that Krishna was keeping. Kamba, Maitreya, and Chayavana, and others. Amazing, the personalities that Krishna was traveling with. Anyway, when he came to Bahulashva's house, he was astonished. It says here, he was astonished that so many great sages, along with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were personally present in his home. So what did he do? Call for nice chairs. So the first thing is, let's mention here. Trina. Seat of straw, just like we have Trinadapi. One should be, what is it? Lower than the straw in the street. So this is Trina. So the first thing, but Bahulashva, he's a king, so he gets nice chairs and cushions. The minimum should be at least a straw mat, or we can offer people a piece of carpet. Right, that's the minimum. But if one is wealthy, then one should give a chair and soft cushions. Right? And they sat everybody down. His heart was filled with love and affection for the Lord and his associates, and his eyes were filled with tears of ecstasy. He washed the feet. This is what one should do. One should wash the feet of the guest. Sometimes, you know, when you go to people's houses, they want to wash your feet. Sometimes, not very often. But this is the culture. This is the culture. I thought that's a strange culture, actually. When I joined Hare Krishna movement, you know, and then the guru would come and then they wash their feet. I think, ooh, what are they doing? See, you know, Vedic culture is so sublime and subtle that when a gross person is exposed to it, then they can't understand it. I think it's strange. Right? He washed the feet of his divine guests, and afterwards, he and his family members sprinkled the water on their own heads. Right? This is the example. To get the dust of the feet of the transcendentalists is considered to be a great good fortune. Great good fortune. Now, listen to this. After this, he offered the guests nice flower garlands. Right? That's easy. We know how to. That's we do that. Sandalwood pulp. So, some sandalwood pulp on the forehead. Cool the head. Because in winter time that may not be so appropriate. Because, you know, you don't want a cold head when it's already cold. So in the winter time, you know, something warming. You know, what's appropriate to the occasion? Incense. Right? Light some incense. new garments. Right? Sometimes when I visit, especially in India, visit friends and they want to give you, they'll give you a dhoti and a chadar, and my wife will get a sari. So this is the tradition. This is the tradition. Ornaments. Some jewellery. Lamps. Right, offering of, this is offering of arti, offering the puja. You know, there are these kind of things. You know, a reception is not unusual in a Western setting where, you know, somebody will come and they'll do the same things, there'll be speeches and so forth. But, you know, offering, I've never seen in any culture other than in the Vedic culture the offering of a lamp to someone, right? Which for the saintly persons, you know, the lamp is what's the lamp a symbol of?
A reflection, a shadow.
A lamp?
In a little cauldron or a spot where you put lamp or something, all the lens closed and you see through it and the shadows come out and reflect and pray.
Yeah. That's
written in a Shastra Quran.
Yep. What does a lamp represent?
Enlightenment.
Yes. What does light represent?
Knowledge.
Yes, knowledge. What is darkness?
Ignorance.
Krishna Surya Sam. Krishna's like the sun because he dissipates the darkness of ignorance. So the offering of a lamp shows an appreciation for the person who can dissipate ignorance. Right? This is the responsibility of a teacher, guru, to dissipate darkness. So offering of lamps, cows and bulls. Right? So when your guest comes, this is the high class, you know, this is the topmost greeting for somebody. Chairs, cushions, sweet words, some kirtan even, puja for elevated personalities, the spiritual master and so forth, offering of lamps, arti, wash the feet. Then what do you do after you've done the arti and the puja and given the cows and so forth? Then what do you do? What comes next? Huh? Prasadam. Yes. Prabhupada says no religious ceremony is complete without the distribution of food. Very important program. You know, last night everybody was lining up at 6:30, even though the feast was only going to be served at 7:30. So, prasadam distribution is very important. And then after that, Bahulashva was massaging Krishna's feet, right? Now take rest. You know, sometimes when I go to Buddhi Mantas, you know, we turn up and we have prasadam, and then Buddhi Mantas says, okay, now lie down and Prithvi or Pat will come along and he'll massage my feet. Let them have a sleep. Huh? This is so this is a high class. This is the. But then Sridhar Dev, what did he do? He was a brahmana who wasn't very wealthy, not at all rich. But when Krishna came with his associates, with his friends, the very elevated. And the interesting thing is that Krishna, when he visited these places, he was at both places simultaneously. But each one thought that Krishna is only coming to my place. Right? So he was, Krishna also reciprocating with them and making them feel like he was just with them alone. And that way making them very transcendentally happy. So when Krishna came with Shrutadeva, then he had his chadar off and he was waving it around. Very well, Krishna's coming. So he was happy also, enthusiastic. But he offered only mattresses, wooden planks, straw carpets, and so on. But he welcomed them to the best of his ability. He and his wife washed. Now, here's the characteristic, you know, similar. He washed the feet of everybody, which is what Maharaj Bahulaspa did, right? And he took the water and sprinkled it all over his family members. So they're doing the same thing. This is Then what did he bring? He brought things that were readily available for him. Fruits, incense, scented water, scented clay. Scented clay. What's scented clay? Anybody know what scented clay is? Maybe that's Gopi Chandan. That's scented clay, isn't it? No. Tilak. Give them some tilak. Right? Simple offerings, some clay that you can get from anywhere really. So simple things. But very pleasing to the guest. Very pleasant offering. Tulsi leaves, kusha straw and lotus flowers. They were not costly items and could be secured very easily, but because they were offered with devotional love, Lord Krishna and his associates accepted them gladly. So on the one hand, one's receiving a very opulent reception from the king, but then on the other hand, it's more simple, but just as satisfying. And it's being offered with the right mood. The Brahmana's wife cooked simple foods like rice and dal. So it must have been at Bahulaspa Maharaj's, it was a big feast. Everything cooked in ghee. Samosas and pakora, chutney. Everything very opulent. But with Shrutadeva, simple foods like rice and dal and chapati. But Krishna, in both circumstances, Krishna was feeling satisfied and welcome. So this is the standard of... Because, you know, if your enemy comes, you might not wash his feet. Right? But it should at least be... Here, fret down. Well, even... Prabhupada says, when Arjuna and Bhima approached Jarasandha, the respectable enemies were given a royal reception. So we can assume that that's the same kind of reception that Bahulaspa Maharaj offered Krishna. Because Prabhupada says that was the law of reception. That's how you receive people. The reception law, this is proper, three times. At the beginning of the purport, the law of reception. In the middle of the purport, that was the law of reception. The reception law enjoins that a poor man who has nothing to offer his guest should be good enough to offer a straw mat for sitting, a glass of water for drinking, and some sweet words. This is the minimum that one should offer. Now, what's happened here? Maharaj Parikshit has come to the ashram of Samika Rishi and he's got none of these things. And he's the king, the emperor. And the emperor surely would know the law of reception. Right? He would know the law of reception. And what did he get?
Nothing.
Nothing. Got nothing. And he was thirsty. He was just looking for a drink of water, which you would ordinarily expect to get anywhere. So, why has this happened? Prabhupada says here, as a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry. He was right to get angry. Now, ordinarily, Prabhupada says, ordinarily a devotee is detached. He's not interested in facilities for himself. Ordinarily. Of course, Maharaj Pariksit was thirsty. But he was performing his duty. He's the king. And so he was thirsty in the performance of his religious duties and responsibilities. And he was being ignored by the sage. Not intentionally. But out of due to the circumstance. You know, Samika Rishi was not absorbed in his meditation, then he would have received Maharaj Pariksit properly. But Prabhupada does say here, and so therefore, Maharaj Pariksit. And Prabhupada says it's astonishing that Maharaj Pariksit became angry, because ordinarily a devotee is not concerned about their personal their personal situation. They're more concerned about the welfare of others. This is a mood of a devotee. And so therefore, on the one hand, he was right to get angry. You know, sometimes people get upset if a devotee gets angry. You know, they criticize him. Oh, he got angry. What is it? He's not samadarshanaha, right? Seeing everybody equally disposed to friend or enemy. But sometimes the devotee gets angry. What are you doing, you idiot? Right? Especially if you're a manager. In ISKCON, sometimes you have to get angry with people, otherwise they won't get the message. Right? They say, oh, it's all right, everything belongs to Krishna. We can do what we like. And even Prabhupada got angry, you know, with his disciples. But when Hari saw, he locked Prabhupada in his room, for example. Prabhupada was having a rest upstairs, and Hari Suri locked him out. He was outside, and Prabhupada was there. He wanted to go to take his bath, and he couldn't. In fact, Prabhupada was so angry that he didn't even say anything. He just had steam coming out of his ears. People said, "Well, what's wrong with you? You're not very advanced. You should just be equipoised." What is it? Sukha dukkha same kripa labha labho jaya jayo. Be equipoised in happiness and distress, victory and defeat, praise or criticism. But no, devotees have Devotees are persons. They have feelings. And they're attached to serving Krishna. And so when Krishna's service is being stopped, their service is being stopped, or the service to Krishna is being stopped, then sometimes they'll get upset. Sometimes they'll be equipoised, but on other occasions they may get upset. Not because they're attached to some material sense gratification or some material position, but because Krishna's service is being interrupted or is being obstructed. Or it's not being done properly. Huh? You know, if you want to please somebody, then you find out what they want. If we want to please Krishna, then we need to find out what Krishna wants. And just as Prabhupada says, you know, if I ask for milk and you bring me orange juice, that's not going to please me. Huh? So we should, especially in performing worship of the deity, you know, it can't be just something that's speculated or created, but there are standards that need to be maintained. Punctuality needs to be adhered to, for example. Otherwise offences are committed. And then one's progress, one's spiritual progress, is hindered by such... So, you know, it's quite, you know, you could build a very strong argument to justify why Maharaj Parikshit was justified in getting angry. You know, he wasn't being, he's the emperor, he's performing his religious duties, he's coming to the ashram of the rishi who, you know, he wasn't expecting a elaborate guru puja. He was just expecting a drink of water, which according to the laws of reception he should ordinarily receive. That's what you give your enemy. Huh? So according to the culture, he's being received improperly, as if you, and so that means, you know, he's been totally neglected. But of course Prabhupada says, but it's astonishing because Maharaj Parikshit is a great devotee, and so therefore, you know, some of the symptoms of great devotees are worth considering. What is it? One who is equal to friends and enemies. Sama Satro cha Mitre cha. Equal to friends and enemies. Mitra means friend. Shatro means to an enemy. Tatamana pamanayo. Equipoised in honour and dishonour. Sitoshna sukkutukke shu. Sitoshna means hot or cold, summer or winter. Equipoised. Sukkutukke shu. Happiness and distress still remains equal. Samasanga vivajitaha. Tulya ninda stuti mauni. Tulya means what? Equal. Yeah. Atul. What does that mean? Atul. Atul Krishna. We have Atulya. This is Krishna. What does that mean? Atulya. Name of Krishna. Huh? Yes, unrivaled, no equal. Right? Tulya means equal. Atulya means doesn't have any equal. That's Krishna. Nobody is equal to or greater than Krishna. Yeah. Tulya ninda. Equal in criticism and stuti, praise. Mauni santushto jena kaina chit. Satisfied with anything. Right? So, you know, Maharaj Parikshit would ordinarily, you know, he's, why isn't he behaving like that? Aniketa stira matiya bhakti man me priyo naraha. Right? Those who are engaged in devotion, bhakti man means one who's engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear to me. So this is all, these are the, you know, the ordinarily the qualities of a devotee. So Prabhupada says it's astonishing that Maharaj preached. Okay, he was justified in getting angry, but it is also astonishing because he's such a great personality, then he would be equipoised. But Prabhupada says, but because of the situation and the circumstance, we can understand that actually this was Krishna's arrangement. That he be put into this situation, a test, if you like, a difficulty. And we can see from the way in which Maharaj Parikshit accepted the circumstance and accepted the curse of the Brahmana's son when he found out that Maharaj Parikshit's response was to garland the king with a snake. Okay, you neglect me, I'll garland you, you're a very elevated personality who doesn't respect the guest, I'll give you a garland of a dead snake. It's kind of tit for tat. Right? Which then upset. But then Maharaj Parikshit regrets and accepts the curse. He could have counteracted the curse, but he took the difficulty, the circumstance, as Krishna's arrangement. And of course it's Krishna's arrangement because it was an opportunity for Maharaj Parikshit to become fully absorbed in the instructions of Sukadeva Goswami. And as a result of that full absorption in the process of devotional service, Shravanadi, devotional service begins with hearing. Prabhupada says, one or any item, one or every item of devotional service is potent or sufficient to provide an opportunity for achieving the success in arriving at the goal of existence, the goal of life. The Maharaj Parikshit specifically was an exemplar of a person who achieved perfection by hearing. Sukadeva Goswami was achieved perfection by speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Parikshit Maharaj achieved perfection by hearing. One alone, or all, doesn't matter. But all potent, enough, potent, the full potency in devotional service. So, Maharaj Parikshit's circumstance has to be accepted as an arrangement of Krishna, by which he was able to completely become absorbed in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, completely become fixed in his meditation, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever yam yam bhavi smaram bhavam, whatever we think of, I can't remember the second line, but anyway, when we leave this body, whatever we think of at the time of death, that state will attain without fail, Krishna says. So Maharaj Parikshit was able to become completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And not only, the great sages and saints are praised, because even though they have gone back home, back to Godhead, Maharaj Parikshit in particular, he's left behind the process, the means by which we can also go back home, back to Godhead. So Maharaj Parikshit, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, has also, by the mercy of Vyasadeva, who compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam afterwards, by their mercy, we also have that same opportunity, which was Krishna's arrangement. So, you know, this circumstance is accepted by the acharyas and by the devotees as being exceptional, but an arrangement by which the Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken, by which Maharaj, and so therefore, you know, devotees see setbacks as being Krishna's arrangement, and an opportunity to for us to be not a, you know, we think, oh no, I'm ill, and you know, this is bad. You know, why should I be suffering some sort of a setback? But this is actually Krishna's mercy. You know, we need to, well, first of all, we need to understand the reality of material existence. Material existence is designed in such a way so that it is not meant to be pleasurable. Huh? It is not meant to be pleasurable. Material existence means suffering. Asasvatam dukalaya, or dukalayam asasvatam. It's a place of misery. Why? Because everything's temporary. Jamma mritya jiravyadi dukkha dosha anudashanam. If we're to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, then we have to learn, even though it's unpleasant, we have to learn to see the material world for what it is. And it is not a place of enjoyment. It's a place of intense suffering. Right? How much pleasure can you get out of your little finger? Not much. But how much pain and suffering can we inflict on somebody with their little finger? Get a sledgehammer out. Bang! Much, much more pain. Huh? Even the little bits of enjoyment that we get in material existence are meager in comparison to the suffering that they can produce. Right? We need to understand that. You know, and the ultimate suffering is to, you know, have to leave the body. The Maharaj Parikshit took that as an opportunity, not, oh no, why me? Why am I suffering? No, this is an opportunity for me to now renounce the material world, renounce my worldly occupational duties, and to completely absorb myself in Krishna. Not lamenting. Where this is the added mood of a devotee. He took it. You know, oh, why did I get angry and put the garland of the snake around? He didn't think about that. So he took it as Krishna's arrangement. And that's what Prabhupada says. It must be accepted that it was so ordained by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became ways to the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming a completely surrendered soul under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Right? When the going gets tough, what do? Oh, Krishna, please help me. Right? Which is okay. That's natural. Natural for a devotee to think of Krishna. And we were discussing in the Isipanishad. To think of one's service. What one's dedicated one's life to. The devotee will think of his service. What he's done for Krishna, and offer prayers. Please accept me. I am your servant. Whatever you want, I'll accept. So that was an opportunity. It was an opportunity for Maharaj Parikshit to surrender. The devotees of the Lord are always under the protection of the Lord, even in distress, right? And in any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotees. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustration as blessings from the Lord. Right? This is an elevated position. But that's what was demonstrated by Maharaj Parikshit in his acceptance of that circumstance. So, you know, on the one hand, he was justified, but it was astonishing. Why was it astonishing? Because ordinarily he wouldn't be disturbed on his own account. But because Krishna had a plan, therefore we see these circumstances, these pastimes taking place. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Any of these points? I think so. The Muni sense organs, breath, mind and intelligence were all restrained from material activities and he was situated in a trance. It was obviously difficult for him. He wasn't aware that the king was even there. That's why it has to be taken as Krishna's arrangement. The circumstance. What does Prabhupada say? Or is it in the translation? What does he say? This occurred by. I'll read it. The king, this is yesterday's purport, the king, being thirsty, asked the sage for water. That such a great devotee and king asked for water from a sage absorbed in trance was certainly providential. What does providential mean?
It's kind of a blessing, like a providence, as well as bound to happen.
Yes, a blessing, providential. But in the dictionary it says by divine arrangement. Right, so divine arrangement. You know, Maharaj Pariksit should have been able to discern that the sage was in samadhi. He's a devotee. The sage wasn't saying anything. Right? His senses. So it would have been obvious. That's why Prabhupada says it's astonishing. Maharaj Pariksit is a devotee, you know, he could understand, he could see who's elevated and who's not. That's the duty of the king. The king is, his job is to be able to distinguish who's a rascal and who's not. Huh? You punish the rascals. So therefore Prabhupada says this. Astonishing. Otherwise, he says it, Prabhupada says yesterday, otherwise there was no chance of such a unique happening. Maharaj Pariksit was thus placed in an awkward position so that gradually Srimad Bhagavatam could be revealed. Any other comments? Questions? Sri Ram.
Yeah. Even though they hurt each other, they were following the rules and the
Yes.
But nowadays those principles are not there anymore. So
no.
How do we deal with the enemies?
How do we deal with the enemies? don't open the door. Make out like you're not at home. Why is that? Why would I make such a suggestion?
Hide the door properly.
Huh?
What you would do if you don't want to open the door, you'd have to hide the door somehow, cover up.
Yeah, that's unlikely. Most houses.
People might find it.
Yeah, most people have got front doors in their houses. Not going to get rid of the door. So why would we treat an enemy like that? As opposed to the Vedic way of dealing with people. Why don't we just open up the door and let them in? Oh yes, you're my enemy. Please have a nice seat. Here, have something to eat. Here's a garland. Wash his feet. Sprinkle the water over everybody's head. Why don't we do that? He might not be your enemy. Actually, not a bad idea. He might not be your enemy anymore. They treat me so respectfully here that I've decided that I won't be an enemy. I'll become their friend. What's the answer? Why would we not treat our enemies according to the Vedic culture? They might take advantage. Yes, they might. They will. At least, in the Vedic culture, at least there's respect for each other. Right? But in this day and age, hardly any respect for anyone. Right? Even, you know, devotees have gurus, but they just ignore their instructions. Right? And that's a person who they'll offer garlands and give flowers and worship every day, but still they'll ignore them. Right? So in this day and age, respect is gone. Trinada Pisunichina. You know, the basic qualities of civilization, civilized behavior. The law of reception is, you know, they're not following it, we're not following it, so we have other more practical ways of dealing with enemies at least. But, you know, I think that there are some yeah, we have to be practical. You could let them in and you know, according to the Vedic principles, worship them and so forth, or at least be respectful to them. But then, you know, when they're in your house and they're checking things out, so they'll come back later and steal them. And then, you know, we would have to accept that as Krishna's arrangement. Right? Prabhupada said that here in Melbourne. He said, you know, he was talking to the Minister for Social Security or whatever. And he asked Prabhupada, you know, what happens if somebody comes to steal from you? And Prabhupada said, let them in, let them eat. Let them take prasadam. Then I think about it. Right? So let them take prasadam. They'll benefit. Even if they come to steal from the devotees. They'll get prasadam, they'll see the deities, they'll get some association, they'll actually benefit. So, you know, there's every chance that if we adhere to these principles that we will change the hearts of even our enemies. Because a devotee doesn't have enemies. He sees everybody ultimately as working under the direction of Krishna. And so he doesn't, what is it, Sama satro cha mitre cha. Equal to friends and enemies. Because he sees everybody working under the direction of Krishna. But mind you, that's not to be imitated. Right? Once, when Prabhupada was in election, Prabhupada got angry with somebody and one of the Indian men in the audience said to him, you know, you should be equipoised. Brahma Bhuta. No, was it? Samadarshanaha. Isn't it? Oh, no, sama, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nasochati Nakanchati, Sama, Sama Saveshu Bhuteshu, yeah, that's it. One should see all living entities equally. And so this man was preaching to Prabhupada, you know, shouldn't get angry. And Prabhupada said, we're not on that platform. That is very elevated. Right. So preachers, we have to be discriminating also. So, you know, Majjhimadhikari discriminates between those who are devotees and those who are demons. And sometimes have to fight the demons. Right? In this day and age, since the demons are not following any etiquettes, then, you know, we also have to sometimes not follow the etiquettes. Because there's no appreciation for the etiquette, it just is leveraged by the foolish for their benefit. You know what I mean?
But when we're, like you said, fighting demons, like we're Vaishnavas and we're not perfect, maybe some of us aren't even like Majjhimadhikari, you know, like the neophyte beginning.
Well, Majjhimadhikari is quite advanced, absolutely.
Yes, it is. My question is, when we present, there was a young man at the Sunday feast who talked about elitism and as he's wrestling with his own purifications in the material world. And his question was about elitism. When you come into an environment like this, how do you manage placing yourselves above others? But when I was thinking about that, it relates to your discourse here. When we're talking about demons out there that were outside of ourselves, how do we discern when to fight and kill a demon, and which harm on another entity?
That's pretty easy. That's, leave killing of demons up to the police.
No, what I mean is spiritually.
Spiritually?
Yes.
Killing demons?
Yes.
Chant Hare Krishna, give them prasadam.
And how about externally, when we're presenting that demons are outside of our own spirit, soul, and physical body?
In what form?
Well, say for example, if I was a demon and you were a devotee, you could offer me mercy or compassion, but when would it be just to kill me by Vedic law, by the Manu's law?
We follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was about to kill Jagai Mada, he was restrained by Lord Nityananda, and he said, in this day and age, that is not yours, that is not your leela.
Right.
The leela is to purify people through sankirtan. Right. And sankirtan means chanting Hare Krishna, distributing prasadam, giving people proper philosophical understanding of things through distributing Prabhupada's books and studying the books and putting them into application.
So when it comes to Nityananda's mercy, for example, Lord Nityananda was very submissive in nature. If we read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, he's very powerful too.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Nityananda Balaram presenting the property of God, for example, the Asthan seat or the drum or the dhoti cloth or the possessions, how should we react if devotees decide to take the Lord's property for themselves? What should we do?
Well, this is my cardigan and my bead bag and my socks and dhoti.
If there was say corruption within ISKCON and then a certain group of so-called Vaishnavas were taking Lord Balaram's property, what should we do as devotees?
Well, we have to recognise that property ultimately belongs to Krishna, but Krishna gives that property to others to use on his behalf. If it's being misused, we have to be careful. You know, at least within our society, well, certainly in most places that I've been, things are being cared for and looked after by senior devotees, and that's their service, that's their responsibility. We don't have to worry too much about, you know, whether it's being appropriated or misappropriated or not. If it is being misappropriated, then let the authorities be aware of your concerns, but let them do the sorting out of the situation. You know, let the proper person who have it as their responsibility to see that these things are properly managed, let them sort it out.
What if, for example, I was a thief, and rather than bring it external to civil law that I was taking the Lord's property, what should I do with the own demon in my heart, considering the feast day yesterday and what it means as a Gaudiya Vaishnava?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, Lord Balaram struck Rama Maharshan Sutta with a blade of grass and killed him because he wasn't being properly respectful. Right? But Lord Nityananda didn't kill anybody. He just set a good example and he preached. He asked them, take up the chanting of Hare Krishna. Serve Krishna. So, you know, our main business is to actually reform ourselves so that we're behaving properly. And then by our example, we can change others. It's by example. Teach by example. Right? And don't worry about, you know, if we were going to cut down all of the demons, quite frankly, we'd be very, very busy running around. And look how it's appreciated. We've just seen in the last day these two fellows, you know, beheaded this fellow in London. And then, you know, they're Muslim converts, radicalised Muslim converts, and so they beheaded this fellow in broad daylight. Beheaded, they tried to chop his head off. And then there were people videoing them with their phone cameras, and they're saying, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, you know. Then when the police came, they fought with the police, they were shot themselves. So, you know, if we were going to be enforcing Krishna's laws on everybody, there'd be a battlefield out there. And have a guess who would win? Not us. It's just the wrong, and you know, everybody just think you're a crazy fanatic.
Spiritually, you would not.
No, spiritually you wouldn't be, because you'd be bringing.
Because even the demise of the body would be, if we were, I mean, what I mean is.
No, but what would happen is. Let me finish.
According to.
What would happen is, we would bring the association, the Sangha of Vaishnavas, into ill repute. And that would not be pleasing to Krishna. So it wouldn't be for our benefit. It would be for the detriment of everybody, including the person that we were so-called helping. So, you know, if we want to change people in this day and age, it's not through, you know, the danda, using the danda. Maybe in years to come, when the administrators and you know, Krishna consciousness is somewhat more prevalent, and there are principles of religion that are established and upheld by the administrator class. But in this day and age, it's the Brahminical class and the Brahmanas, you know, by and large, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya on Lord Nityananda's request, we don't, you know, strike down the miscreants. I think we should finish. We're going to strike down the miscreants within ourselves by concluding this Srimad Bhagavatam class and taking prasadam. This is the best way to destroy the demons within and without. A pakora or two from Lord Nrsimhadev's feast. Then let Lord Nrsimhadev tear out the material desires in their hearts. Not us. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nidai Gaura Premanandi.